Welcome to Listener's Voices, episode 43. And I'm your host, Fran, and I have a guest co-host today, Richmond.
This is Richmond. So great to be here in the studio, Fran.
Yes, a familiar voice to our regular listeners. Richmond is in the 100 club of having having contributed to every episode.
I feel special.
Yes, yes. So fun to have you live here in the chair with us. Yeah, so the prompt for this week's episode is coincidences, serendipity, synchronicity. Three big words.
They are indeed.
And sure enough, I did hear one of the morning hosts stumble on them.
Uh-huh.
She didn't really stumble. She just completely changed one of the words to what she thought it was, I guess.
But
And we've actually only have a couple submissions on that subject, but we have leftover hitchhiking submissions.
Oh, my. More hitchhiking.
More hitchhiking stories. So we will spend a good part of the show on that and then segue by means of a submission that's perfectly suited to segue from hitchhiking to coincidence, because it covers both, into a couple more coincidence stories. And actually, that's right, we do have one or two written submissions about coincidences besides the recording, so a little more than I thought.
Well, that sounds fabulous.
Yeah, so listeners' voices, if you haven't heard before, we put out these prompts for a couple of weeks, and people send in written or recorded submissions to our email, ktwhwriters@gmail.com.
Of course.
And voice memos work on smartphones, or however you can record it and get it to us, or written as well. And anonymous submissions are welcome. If you go to ktwh.org, under the program's drop-down, you'll find listeners' voices. And the last 3 or 4 months of episodes are archived there.
Yeah.
You can get an idea of how we flow here. And you're also welcome to submit about some of those previous prompts.
That's great.
Yeah. There's never a hard deadline on any of these. You can write on anything that moves you or make up your own prompt, for that matter.
I love that it's that open.
Yes. Yep. Because we really want to hear from as many listeners as possible. So I think I've covered the basics, and so starting out with our revisiting hitchhiking, I'm going to share about a minute that I had to trim off of Richmond's submission last week.
Woohoo! We get to hear that.
Yes. We just had so many submissions last week, and this one was a little bit of a stretch, and so I shortened last week's submission, but we get to hear it now.
Okay. The year was 1964. I was 12. It was somewhere in the timeline of summer. Columbia Heights, Minnesota, a second-tier suburb to Minneapolis, was my home. In the summer, my friends and I would play softball in the streets. In the winter, on a corner with a stop sign, we would stay hidden behind a snowbank until a car would slow down and stop. My friends and I would crouch low. When the time was right, we'd run out from behind the snowbank to grab onto the sturdy steel metal car bumper. And off we would go, hitching a ride. Sometimes the driver would catch on to our freewheeling hitching a ride. Then they would get out of the vehicle and give us heck. That's heck with a capital H and an exclamation point. Sometimes they would speed up. Sometimes, other times, the driver might stop abruptly. That we didn't much like. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
I remember those days like they were yesterday.
I remember kids doing that. I don't know if I ever had the nerve to do it myself.
Well, and what kind of boots would we have had to have to be able to slide and not get traction? I couldn't wear what I wear today. I'd be stumbling all over.
And it seems like a lot of cars don't have bumpers you could get a grip on anymore.
No, everything's plastic.
Yeah,
those
molded,
bumpers would
rounded.
Break.
Yeah.
Yeah, these were like sturdy bumpers. You could grab onto them and hang tight.
I can visualize, yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, thanks for sharing that,
well,
that memory. And we have another fun short little thing here before we get into some of the actual stories. This was a contribution from Moose. It was his suggestion that we share this.
Whenever I pick up someone hitchhiking, I always like to wait a few minutes before I say anything to them. Then I say, how far do you think you were going? Put your seatbelt on, I want to try something. I saw it in a cartoon, but I'm pretty sure I can do it.
Oh, my God, I love that.
Yeah, thank you, Moose.
Thank you, Moose.
So, but it does lead us to the issue of trust in your driver. And
oh, yes.
Yeah, that was always an issue. You have to do a lot of kind of snap judgment when somebody stops. And if you are not feeling good about the person, learning we had some exposure last week to the Hitchhiker's Manual from 1972 or 3 or something, and
right.
It included a section on how to turn down a ride. Well, the next thing we're going to share here is from the conversation I shared some last week from 1986 when two of my women friends and I got together to talk about our hitchhiking experiences. And the sound quality, I apologize for. It is terrible, but it gets better immediately. And I hope you can understand. This is Doris talking about assumptions that are made about hitchhikers on the road and her experience, which is really kind of different from mine. But that will go right into one of my stories of hitchhiking back in the early 70s as well. Okay, first we'll hear Doris talking about especially truck drivers' expectations or thoughts.
Okay, let's hear it.
For sure, men were the biggest problem that I encountered before I started hitchhiking and after, in terms of sort of like men always assume they have to make a move on you sexually, and women always assume that they're threatened by men. And it's always a relief when you find men who just say, oh, you want to ride, is that all? And a lot of truck drivers, you know, and I found when I was on the road, I would hitchhike across the whole country a lot, and I was almost always on the freeways, almost always getting rides with truckers. It's sort of like there was this whole culture of truck drivers. They all had their CBs, they all knew the stories, they all got their biggest highs off of talking to other truck drivers and being a truck driver. Just like I got a high out of hitchhiking. Mm-hmm. And so the big thing for a truck driver is to be sexually strong and masculine. And so even if they didn't have the slightest interest, they would always ask you if you were interested. And it got to be, after a while, you could tell kind of like people who were just jerks from the bottom of their shoes to the top of their cowboy hats, or people who just had to go through the routine and then they could care less whether you did or not. And then also just the attitudes of people around. My father thought it was really despicable to hitchhike because he had the masculine assumption that a woman on the road would be looking for sex. My mother had no assumptions about this, whatever. She thought, oh, you're getting all these free rides all across the country.
When I refer to Kenosha in this recording a couple times, please know that actually what I meant was Kenora, Ontario. I took a circle trip from Duluth up to Thunder Bay, across to Kenosha, and back down to Duluth. And along that way, I could have been a close call, but I was in the car with a man, and it's in the Canadian part between Thunder Bay and Kenosha, and he said, we're going to make a stop at this place because he's taking care of these people's wild birds. They had quite a collection of wild birds on their mm-hmm. farm. And so I thought, oh, that'll be interesting. We'll stop. And we saw the wild birds. And then we're going inside the house, and then he's giving me a tour of the house, and then he's giving me an including of the bedroom, the house, and I'm just kind of holding my breath and keeping my fingers crossed, and it went okay, and we got back in the car, and then a little later, he apologizes to me for not having made any advances, I guess. And he said, somehow I just thought maybe it wouldn't be well received or something. I said, thank you, no need to apologize. Yeah, so
wow.
He was a sensitive guy, I guess.
Right.
He figured it out. But yeah, it was interesting what Doris had to say about the universal expectation, or
right.
that the truckers had to perform in a way that as if they were interested, and then they really didn't, you know.
They had to justify their manliness.
Right. And then if it was turned down, it was no problem.
Right. That's such an interesting story. And I've picked up, you know, over the years, male and female hitchhikers, and I never had any kind of a sense like that with any women that I ever picked up. It was like, hey, you're a person, I'm a person, here's a ride.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, good. This is another real short story. It's, again, about kind of about trust. And it was one I was reminded of by listening to that tape from 1986. I'd completely forgotten about this until I listened to it. So this is another excerpt from that.
Picked me up in Minneapolis once. I was just going up to Duluth and the outskirts of Minneapolis. And he just was really shocked that I was out there doing this. And he was driving his business truck or something. And he wanted to be sure that I was going to make it up the Cape. And so he dropped me off. We got off on this exit off at Lionel Lakes or something, and he dropped me off at this little intersection close to the freeway exit and said, just wait here, I'll be back in 15 minutes. And he came back with his private car. You just have to go on your intuition a lot on these things. It sounds like it could be a really dumb thing to do, but I'd spent maybe 20 minutes with the guy or something by this time. And I thought, either I'm a real fool to be sitting here waiting for this guy who's never going to show up, or he's going to show up, put me in his private car and take me who knows where, or I just followed my intuition because I trusted the guy on the basis of 20 minutes.
Yeah.
And sure enough, he took me, I got in his car, we went back on the freeway, took me to Forest Lake, gave me $5, which at that time was enough to buy a bus ticket to get to Duluth, and left me at, you know, by the bus station in Forest Lake. Of course, the bus wasn't coming for 3 or 4 hours. So took his $5, went back out on the freeway, and got stolen.
What are you going to do?
And he had really good intentions.
I remember that's one thing I learned after about within a few thousand miles is you're really out there and you have to trust, or you might as well not be on the road. But if you're willing to take your luck as it comes, and I remember getting in the back seat of this beat up Mustang two-door, and the two front seats were pushed all the way back practically to the back seat, and in them sat two Hell's Angels looking guys with leather vests, no shirts, tattoos all up and down these big hammy arms, big beards, and red bandanas tied around. I thought, I am nuts. What am I getting in the back seat of this car for? I ought to know how to say no by now. I've done it enough. And instead, these people took me, you know, these two men took me to a thing, said, well, good luck, it's not a very good exit, but this is as far as we're going. And they came back 5 minutes later and said, this is a rotten exit, we're going to take you to a better one a couple miles off the road.
That's neat.
You have to trust people or you can't.
So one more little short one here of another experience of mine about trust being challenged, I guess.
Oh, okay.
It's a long trip from Edmonton, Alberta, down to Duluth.
Oh, wow.
And so it's just one short little vignette from that. Well, the first day, and this is like March or something, so camping wasn't an option. So we're driving across the plains of Alberta or Manitoba, and I get picked up by a couple of Native American guys in a station wagon. And so I'm in the back seat, and we're going forever, and they're just not talking. And I figured, well, that's not surprising. That's just sort of, you know, the Native people don't tend to be chatty. And so we're just driving along the middle of nowhere. I haven't seen anything. Snow fields everywhere. All of a sudden, the car pulls over to the side of the road and stops. Nothing, no conversation between them or anything. And the guy on the passenger side gets out, and I'm thinking, oh, boy, what's happening? And at least I have my backpack with me under my arm. And I just had no clue. The guy gets out, walks around to the front of the car, picks up the hood and slams it down again, comes and gets back in the car, and we take off again. And then never a word exchanged. Somehow the hood had gotten loose, and then they both saw it and knew it, and the driver stops, and the guy gets out and closes it. But
they didn't have any evil designs on your person anyway.
Right. Yeah, I know. And then suddenly I'm, you know, beating myself up for, oh, yeah, I think I'm not racist. And I would have felt that way with any two guys in the car, I think. It was pretty funny. Yeah.
Wow, that is quite a story, Fran.
And, you know, so much of in our generation, I can't remember much detail about much of my life, but each of these little vignettes I can totally visualize.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's a great story. I can visualize it, too.
Shifting a little bit now into some what I consider kind of hospitality stories. This is definitely starts out with a story of hospitality. This is, again, from the 1986 tape. This is Linda's story about part of a trip. This is up in Toronto.
And deposited about 9:30 at night, kind of in the middle of Toronto, you know, where the freeway goes through.
9:30 at night.
Yeah, and you know, we had already decided, part of that was our own choice because we decided that we didn't want to ride at night. And then the other option is, what are you going to do instead? So we decided that we'd just go up to somebody's house and ask them if we could sleep in their yard.
Mm-hmm.
And knowing that that would be a real shocking thing, we decided to do it anyhow. And So we walk off the freeway a ways into this little neighborhood and knock on a door, and this old middle-aged woman answers the door, and we used the wrong door. It's one of those houses, you know, where everybody comes in through the kitchen. Well, we'd gone to the front door, and
she knew you were
from out of town. Had to move a chair to open the door. They knew we were from out of town. Exactly. So we explained our plight, that we'd been dropped off and we just wondered if we were hitchhiking. And in the eastern states, we always said, you know, we were from Canada there. We always said we were from California because that added a lot more drama and adventure to our story. So we're from California and we hitchhiked to Montreal and we are on our way back and we just got dumped off here and we need a place to stay. Can we stay in your yard? And they said, she turns around and speaks to her husband and says, well, there's two girls here. They want to spend the night in the garden. And they talked about it briefly and decided that that would be okay. And they brought us in and they fed us and they showed us the backyard. Oh. And they said, I hope you're not afraid of skunks. And we said, oh, no, you know, we all know. We all know skunks, you know, they live out in the woods, no problem. So we ended up laying down on their backyard, which was right next to a swamp. The humidity was outrageous. The mosquitoes were carrying our luggage away. We didn't get to sleep right away, and then the skunk came in to the garden. And we were lying there and talking to each other without moving, so that we wouldn't startle the skunk. No. He's over there by our bed. He's out of lunch here. He's coming this way. Don't move. And finally we went to sleep. The skunk must have gone on his way, and mosquitoes had their fill. And we went to sleep, and then we woke up the next morning. We had assured these people we were early risers because we'd been getting up at sunup every morning, and that we would be out of their hair by the time they got up. So we wake up about 10:30 in the morning. Mr. Bennett, as we came to know him, was out in his shed working. Oh, they're up now.
With the coffee on.
With the coffee on, exactly. They took us in, they fed us again, we packed up our stuff.
You could go cross country doing that all day.
I know.
It would be just the
They gave us a ride to the outskirts of Toronto, gave us a couple of bucks for lunch.
I used to give money too.
Yeah.
It always seemed to happen at the cross of those cultures between the hobos of the 30s and the hippies of the 60s and 70s.
Yeah.
There was something in between where people didn't know if you were doing it because you couldn't afford to stay alive, literally. You didn't have a house, you didn't have relatives, you didn't have a job. Or if you were doing it for fun.
And yeah.
Kind of like the happiness and the eagerness of doing it. Kind of put everyone in a good mood.
Great story. Huh?
Oh, my goodness gracious. That one really got me laughing.
Yeah. Yep. And This is a fun story. It goes back to the same trip I talked about last week when my roommate at that time, Peg, and I hitchhiked to the Tetons for a summer volunteer gig. And during that time, we made a side trip to Seattle. I think this I explained that in this, and that's something that happened on the way back from that trip.
All righty.
We decided that we wanted to buy some camping gear, and somehow we knew about REI, the Recreational Equipment Incorporated, I guess it is, REI, which only had one store at that time, and it was in Seattle. So we decided, and we were going to have a few days off. Well, I remember the return trip from Seattle.
We knew that we couldn't hitchhike in Washington because they were very anti-hitchhikers in that state.
Interesting. Because I remember then that we had to take some kind of transportation. We went south from Seattle then into Oregon and back across. We knew we had to get out of the state of Washington. And for some reason, at least that's the way I recall it, that we went south to get into Oregon. Probably it was shorter than going all the way east to get into Idaho. So my favorite part of that and my best recollection of the return trip, we got in a pickup with a guy. So we were riding in this pickup, and we passed a stand for cantaloupe, fresh from the field with ice cream. And oh, my God. So he treated us both and himself to cantaloupe with ice cream, got out of the truck and ate it sitting someplace. And then we all piled back in the truck, and we were going on for a while still. And finally, he says, "So, how do you guys get around the draft?" And he thought we were guys the whole time.
See how I remember that story, Fran, is that the cantaloupe happened after that part because he was so embarrassed. Remember, his language was pretty salty, and we were just sitting crammed up against him in the cab of this old pickup truck, and he's going on and on, and he finally wanted to know how we were, when we were going off to Vietnam or getting drafted, and one of us said, "Well, when they start drafting women, I guess we'll have to go." He was pretty embarrassed, and as I remember it, he treated us to the cantaloupe and ice cream to make it up to us. That's how I remember it anyway. I'll tell you, it was the best cantaloupe I've ever had in my life.
It was so
good. Mm-hmm. That's one of my favorite stories of the whole hitchhiking escapades that we had.
Yeah.
Oh, my. Another great one.
Right. Yeah. And it was interesting. That was a conversation I had with Peg just last month, and how we remembered things slightly differently. I'm sure she was right about that. But
I get her version.
So, yep. So I think that kind of brings the hitchhiking part of this episode to a close. Let me look here. And because we have the segments on picking up hitchhikers.
Oh, yeah.
And I have something to read here from a woman I know. Actually, she lives out in Washington State. But this, it's kind of a bridge to the coincidence stuff, too, because this just happened to come in an email just before the first hitchhiking episode. Mm-hmm. And for unrelated reasons, she had shared this story with a small group of us. And so I asked her if I could share it on the radio broadcast because it's an interesting story. So on December 7th, my brand new iPhone 16 was stolen. This is a story of how it happened and how I got it back. But first, a little background. Long ago, in a land far, far away, on a cold and rainy October morning, a 27-year-old kid stood on the Manhattan approach to the George Washington Bridge in New York City, carrying a bright orange backpack full of shattered dreams and a broken heart. She stuck her thumb out to hitchhike. Destination, Yosemite National Park, in her California home, the only place she knew that could heal her wounds. The tale of that remarkable trip is not the subject here. I mention it just so the reader knows that I've been there, done that. I achieved my goal in just 3 days. The last saint who picked me up drove 200 miles out of his way to deliver me to Yosemite Valley and bought me a sack of groceries. Another great hospitality story. I'll never forget that kindness. I guess you could say I was lucky, or that I had good angels protecting me. Most would say I was naive, stupid, or crazy. Maybe so. No one assaulted me. I met extraordinarily kind people. But this is no longer the 1960s, when kids all over America were hitchhiking, many destined for San Francisco and the hippie movement. The world seems so much more dangerous now. Still, here in Northeast Washington, I frequently see people hitchhiking. Occasionally, if the person looks clean and not strung out, I'll stop and offer a ride. If you're in law enforcement, you're probably thinking, dumb, dumb, and dumber. I know. I get it. But I've been there, and if I can lend a hand, I will, in memory of all those who have helped me in my time of need. Which brings me back to the cell phone. That Saturday was cold and rainy. I was headed south out of Colville when I saw a young woman at the roadside with her thumb out. She was dressed in clean, newish-looking clothes and had her long red hair in a tidy braid. I stopped and asked her where she was going. Her face had skillfully applied makeup. Her eyes were clear and her speech steady. She was only going to Arden on my route home. I tossed my stuff in the back seat as she got in and placed my cell phone on the console next to the coffee mug. If you ask, most people will tell you about the circumstances that got them out on the road with their thumb out. I've been around the block enough times to know that there's a good chance that anything I hear is going to be a lie and that this person could be in deep trouble in more ways than one, and that my picking up a stranger could be dangerous. The Good Samaritan in the Bible probably had a risky behavior profile. Nevertheless, if I can help, I will. Her destination was Spokane, but she was stopping in Arden first. She requested that I drop her at the fastener and gear shop since she was going to a house in that vicinity. She waved as I pulled back on to 395 southbound. A few miles down the road, I told Siri to resume playing music on Spotify. Siri did not respond. I looked down at the console. My phone was not there. I pulled off the highway and searched the car. The phone was not there. The truth dawned on me. She scammed me. She stole my phone. My brand new iPhone 16 was gone. I resisted getting a mobile phone for a long time. What do I need one of those for? I had a landline, but my very generous sister insisted on getting me one so I could stay in touch. Now I'm addicted to the thing. Now it's gone. I went back to the spot where I had dropped her off, searching the pavement. No phone on the ground, no sign of her. If she had indeed gone to a house on that street, which one would it be? I parked in front of one and considered knocking on the door. Instead, I headed back to Colville to report the theft to the sheriff. My next bright idea was to go to the Verizon store to report it. Since the account is not in my name, they could not access it to see if I had theft insurance. But one of the employees took pity on me and showed me how to track my phone using an app called Find My Phone, which allows you to pinpoint the phone's location. But you need to know your Apple ID and password. Fortunately, I had those memorized, and my memory still works enough to retrieve that information in a crisis. Once we were logged in, bing, there it was, at the house in Arden where I had just been. But how long would it be there? If she departed for Spokane, there was no chance of retrieving it. But if I got down there and confronted her, I might, just might, be able to get it back. I admittedly exceeded the speed limit as I rocketed to Arden again. I blocked the driveway with my vehicle. An older woman was warming up her truck. I told her my brief accounting of what had happened and said that the sheriff's department had tracked the phone to this location, a small lie, but that I wouldn't press charges if I got the phone back. This got her attention immediately. She took me into the house and quickly produced the suspect, who handed me my phone, saying that it had fallen out of the truck when she exited my vehicle. I didn't argue the point, since I know the phone could not have jumped from the console to the ground, but thanked her and left. Unbelievably, I got my phone back. If I had given up, I wouldn't have it. If I'd given too much thought about the danger of what could have happened to me in that house, I wouldn't have gotten my phone back. I called the sheriff to report the recovery. Some say I was lucky, or that good angels were looking out for me. I'd have to agree with both of those statements. Lessons learned? Not all hitchhikers are dishonest, but some are. Not all folks that pick up hitchhikers are safe rides, but some are. If you're going to pick up a stranger, not recommended, Make sure your valuables are out of sight and out of reach. Memorize your phone's username and password. Check out Find My Phone app and learn how to use it. I don't recommend confronting thieves in an attempt to get it back. This time, I was lucky.
Holy
smokes.
So
that was Susan from Northeastern Washington.
Well, thank you, Susan. That was a great tale.
Yeah.
And a happy ending and good lessons.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So, and I meant to preface this episode as well.
Yeah.
Last week, it took me a while to remember to say that we absolutely are not advocating hitchhiking or picking up hitchhikers.
We are not advocating picking up hitchhikers or hitchhiking.
Exactly, right. So one more short little piece from Peg in my conversation last month when she asks about if I ever pick up hitchhikers.
Have you ever picked up a hitchhiker?
Well, there was the time in Duluth when I was a school bus driver and I picked up a hitchhiker and lost my job from it.
But, I didn't ever hear about that.
Yeah, it was...
You endangered all those children?
Right, because it was a woman I knew and it was 25 degrees below zero and I just couldn't drive by her, you know. They didn't take any of that.
Considering those circumstances, they didn't care?
Right, and it was out in Lakewood Township, where it's not like there's going to be a store down the road that you can take refuge in and call somebody from or anything. Apparently, their car hadn't started or something, and so they didn't call it firing. They just took me off that route and didn't offer me any other routes. Yeah.
I've only done that once, and I had my three kids with me, and they were appalled that I picked up this poor woman was just standing on the street. On the sidewalk, and she was just definitely in distress. That was here in town. And I don't know, I just felt like I needed to pick her up, and I took her home. And she was so grateful, but my kids read me the Riot Act. Don't you know you're not supposed to do stuff like that? And I never did it again, but I felt okay about picking her up.
Yeah.
You know when you know, I guess.
Right, yeah.
Well, fun to relive old memories, Fran.
Yeah, yep.
I love at this stage of my life to surprise people with, you know, when you're in a group of people and one of the icebreakers is, you know, tell something that nobody else knows about you or that people would be surprised about. And I usually bring up something like that and nobody expects somebody our age to have done that in the
right.
past. Nobody believes we had a past, actually.
Right, exactly.
We just arrived on Earth being this age.
Yeah, wait till we get to the nursing home and can tell the stories there or really knock their socks off. And you're a mother and a grandmother besides. You totally don't look the part anymore.
No. Well, I'm a great-grandmother, actually.
Oh, yeah.
If you can believe that.
Wow, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, you would never believe it.
That's just really something.
To look at Peg and know that. So I thought that was a fun way to kind of wind up the hitchhiking part of the show.
You know, as I was listening to it, I remembered back when I lived in Minneapolis, a friend of mine and I, we would drive out during blizzards when we used to have blizzards, and we would find people that were struggling walking through the snow, and we would just pick them up. They weren't hitchhiking. We would just say, would you like a ride? Mm-hmm. And it was sort of just a fun thing to do.
Yeah, nice. Very nice. Yep. Yeah, well, that brings us to Patrick's submission, a longer one this week. But it's perfect because it bridges from hitchhiking to the coincidence theme of this week's episode. So here we have about 10 minutes from Patrick.
Okay.
Oh, I do want to mention, now last week's story of his, and I'm not sure about this one as well, but he did mention last week, I meant to say that many of his stories come from his book, which I don't know when it was actually published. I think it was decades ago, but Questions That Are Answered by Lightning.
Oh, my goodness.
Patrick Eller's book, right.
Okay.
And I imagine it's a collection of the essays he wrote for the Lake County Chronicle at that time and also shared on KUMD Radio.
Okay.
So I believe this is a contemporary reading of a story that he wrote many years ago. He starts out referencing this as 20 years ago, but I think it must have been a bit longer ago than that.
Oh, my goodness.
The newest prompt from KTWH has been coincidence. I found a story that bridges last week's prompt of hitchhiking with coincidence. It's easy to say that it was a different time and place because it really seemed to be, even though it was hardly 20 years ago and not really that far away. The Global Village was a philosophical discussion and a technological network that would remake information in an instant world event was still being drafted on the engineer's table. The world was a little bit further away, but where you were seemed a lot closer and even a few degrees simpler. Then again, I was 18 years old and believed the world was my oyster. And in youthful naivete, I felt lucky, and luck followed me around, leaving me no reason not to believe in its existence. I was hitchhiking down the last road on the western coast before the Pacific Ocean, somewhere north of Monterey. Avocados were for sale in roadside stands, and the air smelled like onions, garlic, and the salty, wet air from the beach. Traffic was heavy for the upcoming holiday weekend, and I was stuck in an inconvenient spot. Inconvenient because there was little room to pull over. I don't remember how many hours I stood there trying to get a ride to Big Sur. And I wanted to go to Big Sur because of a book called Confederate General from Big Sur by Richard Brodigan. I was even reading it all the while I was standing waiting for a ride. At the time, it made perfect sense to go to places because of something I read in a book or even heard about in a song. Well, I was standing there reading with my thumb out, and I was startled back to reality by a honking horn and the sight of a blue 1963 Valiant pulled over on the curb behind me. I threw my pack, the same Duluth pack that I carry today, into the back seat of the car and got in the front seat with a woman whose name I found out was Josie. Josie was on her way home to Los Angeles during her break from school in San Francisco. She had long dark hair, and I bet she was a very serious student. We talked for an hour about art and inspiration. She told me a lot about the coast and its history, places only known by the people who have spent some time in an area, and it was obvious she had wandered a good deal along the more isolated parts of the shore. When we were about a mile from a fork in the road where we would part company, she asked if I would like to see one of her favorite spots along the shore. It could be just in time to watch the sunset into the Pacific. It was an offer I saw no reason to refuse, and we turned off on an unmarked road through the wind-swept brush to the edge of the sand dunes that rolled like waves to the ocean's edge. We could hear the surf pound and hiss against the shore, and the sun shined through some broken clouds, sent shafts of light to scatter on the windy, broken seas. With a small driftwood fire, we ate apples and cheese, and we drank sweet wine. I read my favorite chapter of the book that inspired this trip out loud to Josie while she drew a picture in the sand. The sun set, evening star appeared, and it was time to part company. It's like saying goodbye to a friend who I knew I would never see again. Our paths had crossed for this afternoon, but we lived in different worlds. I watched her disappear behind the dunes. reappear on top of the next dune to wave goodbye once more and then disappear again. Below the sound of the surf, I heard her car start and fade toward the highway. I turned back to the small fire and watched the incoming tide erase the lines Josie had drawn in the sand. One by one, the stars filled the sky, and I fell asleep. In this amazing world, we can be led on journeys by words in a book or lines in a song and the kindness of strangers we expect to never see again. This story does not end here, though. The journey was not over. What is this story about? Maybe coincidence, maybe something else. The next morning, after I shook the sand out of my sleeping bag, I was again paging through that same book, and in it was a note which simply said, "Thank you for the afternoon. Be easy. Be fine. Josie." Nice way to begin the day, finding a note like that. I did finally, a day later, make it to Big Sur. The mountains rise right out of the ocean, and I stood on a redwood and adobe deck some 900 feet above the waves that rolled in around the jagged rocks and steep shoreline, and I watched some 100 feet below deer grazing and drink from a small pool on an unusual green and level area amid the bare and steep surroundings. I got a job that same day at a restaurant above that deck because the manager thought they needed a Virgo in the kitchen. Big Sur is a story in itself. Those who have been there know this, and those who haven't can't really even imagine. I'll save some of those tales for another time. What I had to do once I had the job was to go back to Berkeley, get my stuff to find somewhere to live in Big Sur. So I started hitchhiking north about 5 days later. I got a ride from a fellow who was on his way to college for the first time and driving his graduation present, a brand new Volkswagen. I don't remember his name, but he was very excited to be leaving Fresno behind in his new car. He couldn't contain his enthusiasm as he went on about going away to school. I think he was glad to have found a hitchhiker to tell his story to. The highway was crowded with people returning to the Bay Area after the long weekend, and traffic was moving a little bit slow. He went on about his dormitory, his lists of places to go, his classes, and all of this, in between telling me of the special features of his new car. The car really excited him. In fact, while he was digging through those pockets Volkswagens have in their doors, that I looked up to see the traffic ahead at a dead stop, and we were coming up fast on a pickup truck. All I could do was yell, "Hey!" in time for my driver to hit the brakes and slow us down to about 15 miles an hour before we hit the truck's rear bumper. I braced myself against the dashboard, but was still thrown forward with enough force to spread a spider web of cracks across the passenger side of the windshield. I was silent for those first few moments in an accident when you're waiting for the world to come back. And when the world did return, I started laughing, which greatly angered my driver. Struggling to get a grip as my forehead began to swell, I told him I was sorry. I don't know why I laughed. I suppose it was shock. I gained control of myself and got out of the car, still feeling giddy, but keeping quiet, and we stepped to the front of his new car. The pickup truck was without a scratch, but the front of his Volkswagen was accordioned in for about a foot, and this produced another fit of laughter in me. Well, this made the driver furious, and he cursed me up and down, so I decided to part his company. I grabbed my pack out of the car just as the driver was telling me this was no laughing matter. The traffic was stopped all around us with this new inconvenience, and I simply walked up the line of cars asking people if they were heading north when I heard a familiar voice calling my name. It was Josie, about 5 cars up, waving to me and clearing the front seat beside her to give this hitchhiker another ride. She took me to the address of my destination, and we laughed about the wonder of time and place, and again we parted company, and I've not seen her since. But then I don't believe it's impossible that I might not see her again. Patrick Eller.
Oh, my goodness gracious. Thank you, Patrick.
Yes,
that was
thank you.
An amazing story.
Great.
And it goes right from coincidence into serendipity.
Right, yep. He's such a great storyteller.
He is a great
yes,
storyteller.
Thank you for sharing these with us, Patrick. We look forward to it.
And I'd like to find out about that book. I'd like to get a copy.
We'll see if we can do that.
Right.
Great, yeah. Yeah, so moving right along, I have a short submission from a woman I used to work with, and this is her story that she had shared with me some time ago, and I asked her to share it again. So, again, the theme of this episode being coincidences, serendipity, synchronicity, by Roberta Laidlaw. When I was a student at the University of Minnesota, one of the coolest places to hang out at was Midwest Mountaineering Store in Minneapolis. This store was loaded with packs, tents, hiking boots, canoes, paddles, and any sort of outdoor gear you could imagine. Midwest Mountaineering also had an incredible selection of outdoor books. This was back in the pre-internet 1980s when you had to actually visit a bookstore to search for a book. One day at Midwest Mountaineering, I came across a book titled Rivers Running Free: Stories of Adventurous Women. I bought the book and began reading it that night. Rivers Running Free opened my eyes to a world of women paddlers I hadn't known existed. Back in those days, stories about women doing adventurous things were rare. Most outdoor stories were written by and for men. So it was quite inspiring to discover a book describing women's paddling trips to places like Hudson Bay, the Yukon River, Labrador, and other exotic locations I'd never heard of before. The gutsy women in these stories became like silent mentors to me. Following college graduation, I headed to the Rocky Mountain West for a career in natural resources. Before moving, I gave my paddling books, including Rivers Running Free, to my outdoorsy friends. My intention was to live near the Rockies for the rest of my life. However, life had other plans for me. After 10 years in Wyoming, I returned to Minnesota and settled not far from the Boundary Waters canoe area. There, I discovered the best canoe partner of my life. Now he has become my life partner as well. One day, my partner's son presented me with a gift, saying he was glad that I had made his father so happy. His gift to me was a book. Because I'm an avid outdoors woman and loved canoeing, he said, the book had my name on it. I looked at the book he was holding and couldn't believe my eyes. It was Rivers Running Free. After a 30-year absence, this book had come back into my life. I mentioned this serendipitous event to a work colleague, who told me that one of the editors of Rivers Running Free lived on the North Shore, not far from us. I asked if a meeting could be arranged, everything aligned, and we met. And that's how I was able to tell Judith Niemi, co-editor of Rivers Running Free, what her book had meant to me all those years ago.
What a beautiful story, right. And truly serendipitous.
Great. Yes, thank you, Roberta, for sharing that with us. And I'm just so happy that things have turned out so well for her.
Oh, yeah.
So the next couple of submissions take care of, I don't have to really explain the difference of these three prompt words, coincidence, serendipity, and synchronicity, because both Richmond here, my co-host, I should have mentioned earlier to anybody who didn't tune in right from the beginning that my guest, this familiar voice joining me here is.
Hello, fellow listeners.
And so we will hear his submission, and then maybe followed right on the heels of that, we will hear from Leo.
That sounds great.
Okay.
Hello, this is Richmond responding to the prompt, Coincidence, Serendipity, Synchronicity. Today, I texted with my friend Terry, who was traveling through Oklahoma on her way to Texas. My sister had just returned from Texas and is now visiting family in Oklahoma. What brought each of them to these locations of time and proximity is pure happenstance, coincidence. When I was around 41 years of age, living in Minneapolis, I just finished a full-length, self-produced album, a CD of original songs, and I was in the business of promoting it. At the time, a local community radio station, KFAI, hosted by Mark Wheat, was running a program of all original music from the Minneapolis, St. Paul, Greater Metro Community. I frequently tuned into this program, and I'd sent over a CD, or was it a cassette tape, in hopes of having it aired. The title of the album was Beyond Me. Yes, that's the title, Beyond Me. One day, whilst tuning into the Mark Wheat program, there was an announcement that the ninth caller would get free tickets to such and such music concert. I called. Mark answered the call and said that I was the ninth caller and had won the free tickets. Woo-hoo! Joy, oh joy, and triple joy. As when I told Mark my name, he said that he had just queued up the next song for his program, and it was titled Veronica Erotica from my album Beyond Me. Mark and I shared the moment of coincidence as he said that it was serendipity, an unexpected occurrence bringing a sense of pleasant surprise to both Mark and myself. We ended our call as I listened to Veronica Erotica over the airwaves. I think it was the first time I'd ever had a song get airplay. Serendipitous indeed. It's funny, though, not coincidentally nor serendipitous, was that the track he played was my least favorite track on the whole album. One of the most enjoyable experiences in music is creating vocal harmony. When it happens, it's magic. When the voices blend together as one voice, the experience is ineffable joy, synchronicity, singing with others in harmony. It takes practice.
Veronica, Veronica, my friends will love you. Veronica, 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 my friends will love you. Skip bop 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 bop, skip bop 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 bop, skip bop 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 bop, skip bop bop bop.
This is Leo with a response to the listener voice's prompt of coincidence, serendipity, and synchronicity. The how and why of the big and little events unfolding in our worlds can be an obsession for some of us. The reasons things happen can be construed as supernatural, like saying it's in God's plan. Some of us are all for that. Others of us think it's a balancing of a karmic wheel. And then there are others of us that think that our human lives overlap in so many different ways socially that we're inevitably finding surprises that we want some explanation for. As for me, I agree with how Iris DeMent puts it in song, Let the Mystery Be. The expression that everything happens for a reason is a fascinating cliché. How can one really argue with such a notion other than disputing the particular reason being offered? Coincidence. The experts tell me that word refers to a remarkable concurrence of events or circumstances with no obvious causal explanation. And these same experts tell me that coincidences are statistically inevitable. When it comes to human beings, we generally prefer to think that we can make our own luck. Does putting forth greater effort then result in a higher frequency of what we call coincidence, or at least we'd like to think it would? many find that true, but maybe they're just paying attention to the coincidences that they appreciate. Sometimes there are just baffling little miracles for which we reserve terms like serendipity, which is a beneficial coincidence, and synchronicity, the concept of an otherwise unexplainable coincidence that is particularly meaningful to a specific observer. This synchronicity thing has been turning heads since Carl Jung shared his ideas on Eastern mysticism to us Western thinkers. I have a short but spectacular take for listeners' voices on coincidence and the fact of KTWH existing. Fran Kelleher heard Amy Goodman on Democracy Now! Explaining that thousands of low-power FM stations could be licensed by a new law that was passed back in 2010 or 11. Soon after that, Fran asked me, knowing I was on the school board, if I knew about broadcast equipment the school district might have in storage, since Silver Bay had once had a 10-watt radio station in their high school. I told Fran I knew nothing about that, but that radio was something I had history with. I had been a KUMD volunteer host for 6 years back in the 1980s as a young tyke. I also knew a guy named Bruce Eklund, nicknamed Moose, who was a good friend of the KUMD engineer, and he knew a lot about how radio stations function. But Bruce E. didn't know how to put all the parts together and tie it to the internet, which any new station has to do in these times. Leo had occasion to go to the funeral of Phil Cook, an amazing EPA scientist and proprietor of a sugar bush on the Drummond grade, a guy who had touched many lives, and at that funeral reception, Leo reconnected with one Bruce Holman, who had worked with Leo's wife, Pat, at the EPA lab in Duluth. Bruce greeted Leo and asked him if he had anything interesting going on. Leo mentioned the concept of a radio station in Two Harbors, and in short order, I found out that Bruce had extensive experience with amateur radio and that, combined with a sophisticated knowledge of radio electronics and audio, that made him pretty much the missing human link in trying to build an FM radio station and stream over the internet. At about that time, Leo also met a young fellow named Brian, who was in on the startup of the Two Harbors Farmers Market. It turned out Brian was a website designer and much more, and he wound up creating a website and hosting KTWH's web presence from the start of the station in 2015 until the present day. Leo also put out word in 2014 to a few former KUMD show hosts that there was something radioactive brewing in Two Harbors. Over the next several years, hosts Robert and Peg and Moose and Paul joined the team at KTWH, and everyone but Robert has been able to stick with us in some capacity. Recently, you've heard about another alumnus of KUMD, the Night Watchman, Patrick Eller, who has been sharing his remarkable stories and insights on the Listener's Voices show that you're probably listening to in hope of experiencing some serendipity and synchronicity. I know if you listen to the show for very long, you'll catch moments when you feel a connection that goes beyond rational explanation. I know Fran can recall similar surprising connections between community events and radio and people. One example is the Great Flood of 2012, which coincided with KTWH's first public outreach meeting. For me, that resonates as a coincidence, mystery, or both. Radio may be real and totally explainable as a physical phenomenon, but it's also an incubator of synchronicity, and it is indeed serendipity for all of us to be together in this beautiful landscape of the imagination we call KTWH.
Okay, well.
Wow. Well, thank you, Leo. That was just beautifully stated, and I loved what you said about some people look at it as let the mystery be, but mm-hmm. beautifully beautiful.
Right, and I wish I had time. As it is, we're going to be cutting out about 10 minutes of what we've recorded, okay. So I won't do it. But if you're interested, go and find the song Synchronicity by The Police.
Oh.
And the lyrics are really beautiful, I think. Kind of poetically nail the concept of synchronicity.
Well, I'll be sure to check that out.
Yeah. So thank you, Richmond, for joining me today.
Well, thank you for having me, Fran.
Just briefly, we'll give you a heads up again on the prompt for March 15th broadcast will be privacy.
Privacy. I love it.
For better or worse, do with it what you like.
Yes.
Okay. See you then on the 15th, and thanks everyone for your contributions once again.
All right. Thank you all.
For listeners to the Saturday broadcast or the Monday evening replay, there is one more hitchhiking story posted on the website with this episode that didn't fit in the hour constraint for this show. If you're interested in one more adventure, check it out on the website, ktwh.org, under the Programs drop-down, Listeners' Voices.